You are listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Good morning to you in Washington. We have an excellent panel here at the Carnegie Moscow Center on a Sunday afternoon. Right in the center, you have Lilia Shuvtsova, who is the Senior Associate of the Carnegie Endowment, who formerly has the domestic politics program here, but actually she is exceedingly competent across the entire waterfront of Russia's politics and policies.
Come on, it's an exaggeration.
It's true to fact, Jim, is it not?
It is true.
Absolutely. And next to Lilia, we have Ambassador James Collins, who is a senior associate and the director of the Russia-Eurasia program in Washington, D.C., who was ambassador to Russia between 1997 and 2001. And prior to that, he was sort of a roving ambassador to the countries of the former Soviet Union. So that's the panel, and I'm Dmitry Trenin, head of the Foreign Policy Program and director of the Center.
Great. And I think we can go ahead with opening statements.
I give the floor to Lilia. She will start, followed by Ambassador Collins, and I will bring up the rear, if that's fine with you guys.
Of course.
Folks, It was a very smart move because, well, my friends understand that usually I'm much more pessimistic than my colleagues. Okay, let me start the ball rolling. Of course, being represented here, well, representing here domestic program, I will try to give you domestic assessment of Obama visit to Moscow and its possible consequences and outcomes. And frankly speaking, when one looks at foreign policy and the foreign policy event from the domestic perspective, sometimes the event itself and its repercussions look in a different dimension, in a different way. What one would see and consider to be a success from the foreign policy view, very often from domestic policy view, could become a failure, or at least resemble a failure. So I have several points, and I will offer them in a way of brush strokes. So first point on very important, crucial, in my view, question. To what extent Obama's visit and Obama's agenda, the reset button agenda, in the format that we know already, which contains mostly hard security issues, to what extent this agenda will help Russia's reforms and will help Russia's modernization? To what extent this visit will help Russia to pursue rule of law practice? To what extent this visit will help Russia to be more transparent, more open? Unfortunately, I have to make a conclusion that at least I don't know in the history any kind of example when such type of state visits and this agenda, you know, help to solve this transformational issue. Just on the contrary. Well, my fear is that this agenda, only hard security agenda, and Obama's dialogue only with the Kremlin will be used by the traditional part of the Russian political establishment and by the Kremlin as the means to reinforce their status quo agenda, to reinforce the continuity, and in fact it will be used as the means, as an instrument to legitimize the current system and the current political regime. Well, at least recently, the Russian political elite has been so skillful in using President Bush in order to endorse the Russian state capitalism, the Russian superpower status. And now it seems to me they have a kind of, you know, a kind of a task to use or to hijack President Obama with his agenda to endorse the current political ruling tandem agenda. So the second bullet point is on mutual trust. I've read recently all major reports and articles, and I see there one common mantra. The negotiations on START and disarmament process has to create a kind of mutual trust that will help after that to build platform or ground for a breakthrough in the relationship. Frankly speaking, I don't know, maybe my friends will remind me, I don't know a single case in our recent history when such negotiations and such treaties helped to produce long mutual trust. For instance, I'm going back into the recent past and I'm thinking about the disarmament treaty of 2002 and the Moscow Declaration signed by Bush and Putin. This declaration and the nuclear cuts didn't prevent the crisis in the relationship in 2006 and even political confrontation in 2008. And in general, my humble opinion of a domestic policy person is when you start counting nukes, when you start talking disarmament and verification procedure, it's the sign not of mutual trust. It's rather the sign of the lack of absence of mutual trust. And point number three, really I'm here very candid, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that Moscow could turn into a kind of trap for the U.S. president. Because if he comes only with this agenda that we know, maybe he has broad agenda that we don't know of, but if he comes with this agenda, hard security, only START, maybe ABM, and, you know, discussion of Iran and some other points where Russia and America have different approaches. You know, this agenda could only create frustration in all camps, you know, just across the spectrum. It will frustrate liberals, people like myself, because we are anticipating Obama to give message to the Russian population, to the Russian society, and to make a difference between the interests of Russia and interests of the Russian political elite. It would frustrate and create disenchantment among the Russian pragmatists that are trying to move towards Medvedev and would like Obama also to send to Russian political elite the message of change because they're so fed up with Vladimir Putin. And, of course, this agenda will apparently make unhappy Russian traditionalists who are anticipating that Obama will move beyond the START treaty and will incorporate Russian rules of the Kremlin rules of the game. So he will agree to the principle of don't meddle offered to him by the Kremlin and Russian traditionalists. That means don't meddle into the Russian domestic affairs, don't meddle into former Soviet space. So these are my worries and my concerns. If I, and here I'm wrapping up my chattering, if I were advisor to Obama, or if I were Obama, who is coming to Moscow, this is first visit to this very strange country, neither partner nor maybe direct adversary of the United States, I would try to appeal both to the political elite and to the society. I would try to see the difference between these two objects. And I would try at least to suggest, because it's very difficult to use the visit, you know, for the coherent program, I would try to send two messages. One message to the elite that I'm ready to engage Russia on the broad range of issues, and I would try to make at least START the successful issue. And I would follow Dmitry Trenin and Jim Collins' advice and somehow solve the problem of the ABM. But secondly, I would advise Obama to appeal to the society, to liberals and pragmatists, and offer a kind of a vision of the new pattern of American policy, the vision that will include, first of all, stimuli for the Russian transformation, or at least some design or framework for the benevolent environment for the Russian transformation. Whether he will be up to this, well, we'll see already on July 6th. And it will be, of course, test not only for President Obama, it will be the test for the world. Because 72% of Russians, it's amazing number, 72% of Russians are interested in Obama. They know who Obama is. They know at least shortly his history. For the first time, 45% of Russians currently, they have respect for American leader. They have hope for American leader. And only 30% are indifferent. And, you know, there is a small city in the Urals region where a population collected signatures and sent a letter to President Obama. I don't know whether he got the letter or not, because they're appealing to President Obama, asking him to solve their wage arrears problem. So you see, there is broader spectrum of population that are looking to Obama's visit and expecting whether Obama will be the man of change for Russia. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lillian. That was an excellent introduction into this discussion. May I now pass the floor on to Ambassador Collins? Jim?
Thank you, Dimitri, and thank you, Lillian. I will approach this from a slightly different point of view, I think, and try to give some sense, it seems to me, of the diplomatic and state-to-state context within which this visit is going to take place. And then say a word or two about what I've heard over the last few days about expectations. As I think all of you know, the American administration, when it came in, or relatively quickly after that, said that it wanted to, quote, reset, unquote, the relationship. I think many of us have felt that that was not necessarily the term we would have chosen. We might have said something like restructure. We might have said, in my view, if we're going to use computer analogies, develop a new operating system. It seems to me that the indications of what that operating system will be and what the agenda as defined by the administration has at least preliminarily been said to be is best understood if you read the statements that were issued in London. That set of statements, I think, first of all, said that as opposed to earlier administration efforts in the Bush administration, the agenda with the Russian Federation was going to be, I perhaps will just use the word comprehensive. It was very broad. If you look at that statement, while it was not necessarily detailed, it laid out, in essence, an open-ended agenda of engagement. Secondly, it set some priorities as the way in which the American leadership assessed the important issues that needed to be addressed first and gave some indication of why. And those were the hard security issues, most specifically the START agreement's future, because if we don't get something in its place, the entire framework for arms control will more or less disappear on December 5th. And so follow on to a START agreement, a strategic arms reduction agreement, was made a priority in a sense by virtue of necessity. There is a calendar, there is a specific date, and there are specific reasons that you want to preserve that framework, including all of the confidence-building measures that are built into a verification system that go away unless we have that treaty reaffirmed. So there was that, and the second element of it was, I think, also an important calendar-driven priority, which had to do with, broadly speaking, efforts to make our joint efforts to develop a regime that will prevent the erosion of the non-proliferation treaty and its capacity to guide us in the new nuclear age without having greater proliferation was going to be essential, because next year there's a review conference of that treaty, and unless we do something to get Russian and American positions in line or demonstrate our capacity to do so, most people believe we will have a very difficult and probably not very productive conference. So, I mean, part of the reason for the agenda is calendar, the fact that certain deadlines are in front of us, and I would say that, as much as anything else, defined the priorities almost from the beginning. Now, that said, the fact that this was the priority about what to tackle first didn't necessarily mean that it defined the whole agenda, nor did it mean, in my view, that Mr. Obama, as he comes, is going to have somehow this narrow, if you will, Cold War agenda updated. Rather, if you read the statement in From London, it opens the door on discussions of everything from the broader context of European and other regional security questions to what we do to expand and enrich our commercial and economic relationship, how we do other things to open up and expand our people-to-people and, if you will, civil society exchanges and back and forth. In short, how do we expand engagement to be more than just security? And I would say it's rather a harsh judgment to think that that is not a very important part of the agenda, because I'm convinced it is. Now, with that background, I would simply say that having talked to people here over the last few days and in Washington before that, there seem to be four or five areas that are pretty clearly under discussion and likely to be the focus of this sort of horrible word, deliverables. It is not clear exactly what is going to be delivered yet, because negotiations are still going on. This seems to be necessary to bring things to the last moment. But they are involved, and I will simply list them. One is a follow-on to the START agreement, some sort of framework or statement or guidance that will shape the end product negotiated by the negotiating teams in time to meet this December 5th deadline. I don't know what form this is going to take, or at least people aren't willing to say what form it will take, but that is clearly going to be one of the issues that will be addressed. The second will be additional steps on non-proliferation, try to strengthen the regime we are using and that we share responsibility for developing. Not entirely clear to me just what that's going to be, but there will be steps that are going to try to make the case that we are serious about expanding our capacity to be leaders in the field of developing an effective non-proliferation regime. Third issue that everyone is discussing here and very much in Washington is expanded cooperation on Afghanistan. Not entirely clear what all it will be encompassed here, but the discussion is ranging over the issue of expanded transit for American goods, men, personnel, logistics, and so forth through the Russian Federation and on into the Afghan theater. There's discussion about enhanced controls to try to limit the effects of narcotics flowing into this part of the world, into the Russian Federation, but also into Central Asia. So there are a variety of ways in which expanded cooperation seems to be an issue that people are looking to say we're going to do more about. And finally, Admiral Mullen, our chairman of our Joint Chiefs, was here and talked to his Russian counterpart recently. And there's the admiral is coming back with President Obama. So there's a sense that there will be something that will emerge on the way our militaries relate to each other over the coming period. At least that's the subject of discussions. And finally, and here I think is where the rest of the agenda fits in, and where I think we can't simply dismiss it, is a lot of discussion about how there is going to be some kind of systematic organization for the follow-on to this meeting and others that will come across the two governments. In short, what kind of a structure will we have to conduct our business? Something that's been sorely lacking for the last 7-8 years. Something that existed in earlier administrations, both if you go back to Ronald Reagan's time, George Bush Sr.'s time, and the Clinton administration, all had one form or another of structure to conduct our business. Mm-hmm. I think those are the kinds of elements that are going to be taken up. Now, in parallel with this, there are going to be two meetings, one of business leaders and business associations from the two sides, who will basically be discussing what, in fact, the private sector thinks is necessary to improve and expand the economic and commercial relationship. And I'm sure they will be taking up everything from, you know, things like business visas to WTO membership and what it means. There is also a parallel meeting of a group of non-governmental organizations and other individuals and organizations to talk about some issues of civil society and how we might cooperate in them. And that seems to range from human rights to public health and across a range of issues. The exact role of these meetings is not yet clear to me. I think it's still being worked out. But it's an effort to expand the relationship beyond just government to government and give some stimulus to it. Now, I guess in that regard, I would say that I don't know what President Obama is going to say. He will deliver a speech and it will be an important speech. My personal hope is that he will address the Russian people and the younger generation and talk about the kinds of things for which we have shared responsibilities and the kinds of arrangements that are probably going to be necessary if we are able to work effectively together. That speech will be important. It will set a tone for the way he hopes to conduct it, and I think we'll all have to see how he does it. But it does seem to me there are two or three things that are important that I would judge as how you say, is this summit meeting, which is really the first where we have had presidents spend a lot of time together in a long time. Is this going to put us on a new track? Is it going to establish some new base for the conduct of our relations that will be more productive, more effective, and frankly, more open? Here, I would say one way to judge the success is to what extent this meeting is able to deliver or make advances on the agenda that was set out in London. I think it's only fair that if the two leaders have said that's what we're trying to do, to give them at least the benefit of the doubt that if they are doing some of it, that makes progress. And one can always judge on a number of bases, but that's one I think needs to be used. Secondly, I would say if we, in fact, are successful in establishing a process by which the engagement is, rather than contracting, going to begin to expand again between us, that is a very important element in maintaining the openness of the relationship, the openness and basically promotion of Russia's integration into the broader global economic trading, security, and other systems of the industrialized societies. I think personally that's a very important achievement if we can in fact begin to make that happen. And thirdly, it seems to me that the question of what kinds of follow-on we will see, and while much provision is made for an effective use of these instruments that they seem to be developing to advance not just the security agenda, but a much broader one, is a fair way to look at whether or not this meeting has in fact succeeded in advancing the idea of restructuring, or if you will, creating a new operating system that is to the benefit of all. And that's essentially what I think I would say as an opening. I am perhaps more hopeful than many. I heard a good deal of healthy skepticism among my Russian friends and colleagues over the last couple of days about this whole enterprise. And many who continue, it seems to me, to try to define our relationship by our differences. I think President Obama at one point said that, you know, if you define your relations by your differences, you're going to have a very difficult relationship, or words to that effect. I think he will be trying to do the opposite, to enhance the degree to which the relationship is more balanced and where it the cooperative areas will make it possible to deal effectively with the differences that are very real and very difficult. So I'll stop there. Dimitri?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jim. I'm afraid I may sound a little bit more pessimistic than either of my colleagues.
Come on, it's impossible.
I will prove it to you. I don't think that the visit will contribute to Russia's modernization or Russia's evolution toward the rule of law, or it will give an impetus to Russian reforms. Certainly, this is not the angle from which the Russian leadership views the visit. And certainly, this is not, as I understand, this is not what's behind the Obama administration's plans for the entire Russia relationship, including this visit. From the Russian point of view, from the Russian government's point of view, this is primarily about status. This is primarily about where Russia stands vis-a-vis the U.S. and how they manage their relationships in various parts of the world, and what role, what place Russia occupies in the global pecking order of nations. I don't think that the visit will contribute to the legitimization of the Russian leadership by the U.S. government. Presidents meet several times a year. This is not going to be the first meeting between Medvedev and Obama. They will meet again after Moscow. I don't believe, and I agree with Lilia, I don't believe that arms control gives trust. It can give a little bit of confidence, but that's all it can give. Basically, arms control regulates adversarial relationships, and this relationship, in a way, continues 20 years after the end of the Cold War. I don't think that the visit, in principle, could encourage Russian pragmatists or liberals. I think that is something that only society at home could do. And I think that society is maturing pretty slowly. It is maturing, but it's maturing slowly. To use a stock market analogy, and I think it's important to mention it, the U.S.-Russian relationship plunged to the lowest depths since the early 1980s, since, let's say, 1983, last fall. And the two countries came within a striking distance of a serious collision. The relationship bounced back to a more or less usual or tolerable level, but not because of any reset of the relationship. I don't think there was any reset. There was, in the U.S.-Russia relationship, there was a reset at two levels. One reset was the global economic crisis that changed a lot of optics for people in Washington, people in Moscow, and people all over the world. And the second reset was the button that was pushed on January 20th this year when President Obama succeeded George W. Bush as the President of the United States of America. There was a reset of the entire U.S. foreign policy that included the Russia aspect, but Russia had nothing to do with that. It's very interesting in the sense that all the things that seemed to be and actually were irritants last fall when the relationship touched that low, all those things were suddenly off the center stage. The only reason for that was a new U.S. president. There was no other reason for going slow on Ukraine and NATO, going slow on Georgia, going slow on missile defenses. Now, the Obama visit could mark the high point in this period in U.S.-Russia relations. And that certainly be a summit level. But my question is, which way from the summit? Is it going to be way up, to a new summit, to a new high in the relationship, or a slow, perhaps, slide, and then more of a slide, and more of a slide in the relationship. I would say that the biggest deliverable from the visit is likely to be an agreement on the parameters of the START Treaty. But the START Treaty is, to me, is no big achievement. It's going to be an important treaty, and it will regulate, as we discussed before, an adversarial relationship. But this will not bring the U.S.-Russia relationship to a new level, give it new quality. The things that the United States wants to get from Russia, the Obama administration wants to get from the Kremlin, Iran, more Russian assistance to U.S. efforts in Iran and Afghanistan. Well, Russia could do something, but Russia could be important on the margins. Both issues are coming to a head within a year. Both Iran and Afghanistan will lead to very important decisions within 12 months. Russia could be a factor, but it's not going to be a decisive factor. In my view, the only potential breakthrough in the relationship would come if Obama and Medvedev agreed to move toward joint missile defenses, not because missile defenses in and of themselves are so important, although they are, but because that would cut at the very foundation of the, if you like, the founding myth of Russia's strategic posture, which basically says that the United States has a hidden agenda. And this hidden agenda basically includes only one item, and that item is destroy Russia. And through building its missile defenses around the world, according to that logic, the United States is seeking a status of invulnerability to a Russian counterstrike. So when the United States will have its global missile defense ready, Russian nuclear forces will be basically null and void, and the United States could either destroy Russia physically or destroy Russia's will to be an independent player. I'm reciting the thinking in the heads of so many Russian policymakers. So if we have missile defense, then this cuts at the very foundation of that logic. But I'm not very optimistic as to whether this could be achieved, whether this could be the process could be started at this meeting. And let me finally say that I have no problem with the success of the summit. The summit will be billed as a success. My question is, which way from the summit, whether the summit would lead to a relationship that will gradually undo the real problems between, at least in the Russian approach toward the United States, whether it will lead to a Russian leadership looking at the relationship as Lilia would and I would like them to look at from the angle of modernization and other things. But we have a long, long road, I think, before we get there. Thank you.
Thank you, Dmitry. Questions?
Yes, I am Nicholas Crowley of the Washington Times. I have quite a few questions, so I'm very glad that there's not much competition this morning for questioning. First of all, Ambassador, you mentioned that General Mullen was there. Unlike previous presidential visits, this time the Secretary of State didn't go to Moscow to prepare for the visit. I don't think the National Security Advisor went to Moscow to prepare for the visit. Could you talk about, not only the ambassador, but all of you, could you talk about the difference this administration perhaps has demonstrated in preparing for this visit? It's basically been Rose who's negotiating the START follow-on, Mike McFaul, whom you all know, of course, because he was associated with Kearney for a long time. It seems that there are a couple of trusted people, experts on Russia, who are preparing for this visit rather than the Secretary of State. We didn't have an Assistant Secretary of State until very recently when Phil Gordon took the job. So I'm wondering if you're noticing any differences in preparing for the visit.
Well, I think the only thing I can tell you, and I'm not going to get into the names of individuals and so forth, is that there has been a rather steady stream of people negotiating issues in these areas I have laid out for you, who are at the expert level, or at least at the level that one would normally expect to have negotiate them. You're right, Rose Gademuller has been doing START there. She has counterparts for some of these other areas. Part of the problem is that the administration, until recently, for instance, in the security area, I think had no undersecretary. So you've kind of had an acting person in that area. So until Ellen Tauscher got into the office, you didn't have the logical person to deal with those issues. Bill Burns, the undersecretary of political affairs, has certainly been engaged over time. And, you know, we didn't have an assistant secretary for Europe until just a couple of weeks or 3 weeks ago or so. So, I mean, I think some of this is a reflection simply of the fact that it's taken time to get the administration's structure into place. And, you know, the Secretary of State was involved in the preparation for the London meeting. I don't think it's all visits anymore. Mr. Lavrov was in Washington. So it's not that you haven't had ministerial-level work on this. As I said, Admiral Mullen has been here. In essence, pretty senior fellow preparing these things. So I wouldn't say that it's all dramatically different. I would say what strikes me is that there is a set of intensive efforts in the areas that are being at least defined as those under real negotiation to engage counterparts, try to find out what's possible. I think the negotiations are continuing. And, you know, one has to remember there are such things as telephones. So I wouldn't make a great deal of differences, I think is what I'm really suggesting to you. What I think is critical is that there was a framework for what people were set out and tasked to do that was set by the two presidents in London. And that was prepared, if you go back and look at it, by the Undersecretary for Political Affairs, at least, on one occasion, the Secretary of State on one occasion, and then the presidents met. And yes, you had others going and doing this work. So I wouldn't say that this is untypical.
The rest of you agree?
I'm sorry?
The rest of you agree?
Would you
comment
on that?
If I may, but, well, absolutely. I can comment only from the position of the humble observer of these trips back and forth.
Likewise.
What I feel as an observer, I feel that we don't have much information about, you know, about the possible vectors, trajectories. We don't have enough commentaries on both sides from the official Kremlin position and from the official White House position. So I've tried to compare the first trips and the first meetings between Putin and Bush and the forthcoming visit of the US president to Moscow, and I found much more material, much more data, much more statements, much more announcements, etc., much more liveliness with respect to the meetings between Bush and Putin. But apparently Jim is right. You know, the team is in the process of being formed. And my second explanation, but again, it's the explanation of the layperson. I'm not doing foreign policy. The second explanation is maybe the American side intentionally wants to downplay the reset button formula, because the reset button formula provokes too many expectations.
I wonder, you mentioned the danger of, I think Lilia said this at the beginning, for the Russians hijacking Obama to fit their own agenda and advance their own agenda. Do you agree that Obama actually might be seen, or at least in the commentary, as being too soft on Russia when it comes to democracy, human rights. I know what happened with the Bush administration when they tried to talk about it, and especially Condi Rice and with things with the media in Russia, and she was confronted by a Russian journalist at one press conference with Lavrov when we were there a couple of years ago. It's kind of a lose-lose. You know, you're damned if you do, and if you're damned if you don't. But if you're trying to start a new relationship, what is the tone that should be struck between the strategic issues and then democracy issues?
Lily, would you?
You're asking. Okay. As far as I remember, President Obama at least twice, if I'm not mistaken, stressed one very important element, apparently, of his future policy towards Russia. He was addressing the issue of the area of privileged interests. So, in fact, this is one of the key elements of the Putin, Medvedev, Lavrov paradigm. And I call it the sign and reflection of the neo-imperialist touch or turn in the Russian foreign policy, which says that apparently President Obama is thinking about domestic developments because neo-imperialism is closely linked to the Russian domestic developments. But I have never heard so far any comments on the part of the U.S. president with respect to the human rights, democratic developments, distortions of the rule of law in Russia. Well, my hunch is that simply, firstly, he doesn't want to spoil the platform for the future visit. Secondly, that he is thinking. And my reflection, at least speculation, on the basis of his Cairo speech on June 4th, is that we could expect from the President Obama unexpected. And apparently he's ready and he's able to think existentially, strategically, and he's able to touch on a rather risky for the Russian political elite subjects. So, well, I'm waiting what he will say in his speech before the 1,000 crowd at the Russian economic school.
If I may add to that, no, I don't see a danger of President Obama being hijacked by the Russian leadership on a visit here. I think that the president has formed his views. I think that the president knows what he wants to achieve, knows why he's traveling to Russia. Russia is certainly not the top priority for the Obama administration. It could be instrumental in the eyes of the White House in reaching some important other goals, such as Iran and Afghanistan. They want a good relationship with Russia. They don't want to have too much irritation, but it's not that Russia is suddenly one of the top issues on the U.S. The president's agenda. I would be very relaxed on the issue of privileged interests or standing up to Russian neo-imperialism. I think that the future of the countries, the former Soviet Union, will be decided by those countries themselves, and that we have plenty of evidence suggesting that that's what's actually happening and that's what's going to happen in the future. It will not be decided in Moscow. It will not be decided between Washington and Moscow, which way Ukraine goes, which way Belarus goes, which way Armenia goes. We have seen a lot of examples of those countries pursuing their own policies as they see them, and you cannot claim that they're doing so at the instigation of this or that country. I would also be interested and actually I'm very intrigued as to what the president is going to say in his Moscow speech, but Moscow is no Cairo. It's a different environment. The expectations are different. President Obama is a celebrity in this country, but it's not that, at least in my humble opinion, that he is not someone who has been looked at as someone who would show the way, give guidance, speak the truth, stand up to the domestic leadership. I don't see these sentiments and these expectations in Russia. So, again, I don't think that either the realists or the idealists, however you want to define them, have much to worry about. This is not going. This visit is not going to surprise them in a bad way, but it's not going to hearten any of the groups. The Obama people will go down the line that they have already laid down. I don't believe that what people are discussing right now has a direct impact on President Obama's policies. Jim, if you want to add something to that.
I would only say, again, I would come back to the theme of engagement. I happen to believe that President Obama has at least decided that it will be a very important dimension of his policy toward Russia to try to expand the areas and the capacities for engagement across a much, much broader agenda than was the case of the Bush administration. And in fact, in the Bush administration, I would argue if you look at budgets, you look at projects and programs, you had more or less over the period of that administration a pretty steady disengagement in the relationship. That had its costs. It brought many different results. And I would simply suggest that President Obama understands, I'm quite sure, that he is dealing in Russia with a country which is important to us because we tend to run into Russia in almost all of the major international contexts within which we are pursuing American interests and objectives. And you either run into Russia as a cooperative force or as one that in essence, is obstructive and or wants to define itself by the degree to which it can show the United States it can't get its way. To a very great extent, I think we found more and more of the latter than the former over the last couple of 3 years. And I think he feels that's been counterproductive and would like to see it reversed. Now, with respect to Russia's domestic situation, I don't know what President Obama thinks about our capacity to have an effect here. What I would say in my experience is that the most critical point to be underscored in all of the things he's doing is that he seems to be intent on keeping Russia open and engaged with the outside world. And that to the extent that is true, and to the extent Russia's interests become more and more intertwined with that outside world, that's probably a constructive force in the way Russian reform and Russian transitions will go over the years to come. An isolated Russia is one in which, frankly, I have little faith that we would see constructive or positive directions.
Over to you guys.
Thank you for doing this first. It's very helpful. I'm Lozano with AFP, Agence France-Presse. The U.S. administration keeps insisting that it wants to push the reset button, but is the Russian government as interested as the U.S. administration in basically improved relationship? And could you also elaborate on how the relationship between Putin and Medvedev could play into this?
Well, if I may, I will start. It seems to me that there is a kind of a symmetry between the American and Russian anticipations and an understanding of this metaphor, reset button. It seems to me that...
Is this symmetry or asymmetry?
Asymmetry in perception, in understanding.
Asymmetry.
Asymmetry in understanding of a reset button metaphor. It seems to me the Americans are viewing reset button as an instrument to pursue the American interests in the non-proliferation area, in Iran, in Afghanistan, etc. And it seems to me that the Russian leadership, at least the Kremlin team, is viewing a reset button as the possibility to prove that they have been right on all issues in the Russian-American relations, and that they would like to use the reset button strategy and policy in order to race to increase the leverage of Russia and the great power status of the Russian Federation, and also to use this reset button politics as a possibility to get from the America deliverables. And what are the deliverables? It seems to me that Jim and Dima, they participated in several conferences with the Russian official pundits and Kremlin propagandists quite recently, these several days, and they can inform you about what kind of deliverables the Kremlin would like to have from the United States. So you see, there is a symmetry of plans and ambitions. And the symmetry itself is not a healthy sign, because when you have a symmetry of anticipations, you'll have apparently, you know, dissatisfaction and frustration when you see the results. And with respect to Putin Medvedev, well, very briefly, I belong to those who don't see any serious difference between the president and prime minister agenda, especially in the foreign policy. It's true that Prime Minister Putin is still calling the shots. And in this Argentinian tango, this is Putin who is marking the steps. And even more, Medvedev showing some signs of liberalization, or at least attempts to liberalize rhetoric on the domestic issues. He expresses himself much more tougher on the foreign policy issues, on many crucial issues of the foreign policy of Russia, which demonstrates apparently the fact that he would like to increase his leverage. He would like to appear strong, you know, using harsh, macho-style foreign policy slogans.
Well, if I may add to that, I think that the answer is yes, the Russian leadership is interested in an improved relationship. They did engage with President Obama at an early stage, and they became pretty enthusiastic about the prospects of U.S.-Russian accommodation. The Russian leadership comes to this meeting with an agenda. The agenda includes issues such as European security, especially as far as the former Soviet countries are concerned. From the perspective of the Russian leadership, there should be no further enlargement of NATO to the east. There should be no U.S. bases in the newly independent states. The Russian leadership wants the plans for missile defenses in Central Europe to be canceled, and the Russian leadership wants the United States to accommodate Russian security concerns within the new strategic arms reductions treaty. So, yes, an improved relationship, but a relationship that takes into account what the Russian leadership calls legitimate national interests, primarily security interests of the Russian Federation. There's also a number of things that the Russian leadership is looking for in the economic field, and that would include the agreement on peaceful nuclear, let's say nuclear energy collaboration, the so-called 1-2-3 agreement between the two countries that was signed but has not been enacted yet. And then there's a whole range of other issues. Yes, the Russian leadership wants to engage with the United States, but the Russian leadership comes with an agenda and comes with a set of call it conditions, call it norms and principles. Unlike in the 1990s, they are not simply accepting what they are being offered by the United States. They want to be present at the creation of a joint agenda. And they claim an equal status, an equal place at the table, and that is very evident. So so much for the interest. I would also add here an important point. There was a statement yesterday by the Russian presidential advisor on economic affairs, Arkady Dvorkovich, and he said that Russia is going to run a budget deficit this year, next year, which is bigger than previously anticipated, which means that Russia will be returning in a bigger way than previously thought to the international financial market as a borrower. Russia will need foreign money, and it will need it somewhere in the middle of next year. And that is a factor that will also require, from the Russian perspective, an improved relationship with the United States. Russia has been hit by the crisis as much as any other country. Now, as far as the tandem is concerned, I think Lilia said it, I agree, it's President Medvedev who will be speaking, who will be conducting hours of negotiations with President Obama. But the man who calls most of the shots in this country is Prime Minister Putin. And in foreign policy matters, as well as in domestic policy matters, there's precious little daylight that you can see between the two men. Although, of course, they are different and they have different instincts, and they may show in this instance or another instance, but on matters of principle, those two basically are at one.
If I may only highlight one very important element of our discussion, I would agree with Dmitry. Russian political elite and the ruling tandem demonstrate all evidence that they would like cooperation with American leadership, or rather selective cooperation, but on the Kremlin's terms. And at the same time, the Russian political elite is not going to reject anti-Americanism as the key instrument in consolidation of the Russian society. This is, like driving two horses in opposite direction.
I only would make a couple of points about the framework of this discussion. First of all, it's my distinct hope that President Obama pays no attention to who is up or down or in tandem or whatever, that he's dealing with the Russian government. I think he understands that. And that's the only way to conduct his business. But the second point here is I don't want you to take away the impression that this visit is all about whether President Obama accepts the Russian agenda or doesn't. There was a jointly agreed agenda which was negotiated and presumably reflects as much American interests as it does Russian interests when the two men met in London. There were statements in there where they disagreed, and I would certainly assume that that's the case and it will continue, that there will be disagreements in many areas. But the fact of the matter is what is going on here is that both countries come with an agenda. They have, for their own interests, defined objectives and goals in this meeting, and presumably will each take away their own assessment about how far they got in meeting their objectives, and they will portray it, I'm sure, as certainly concessions by the other side and victories for their own. The reality is that if you look at this agenda, I don't find that there's any particular zero-sum game going on here. Perhaps this is the low-hanging fruit where this is easy to have no zero-sum game because we're both interested in having a more productive relationship in the areas that seem to be the most important or the key ones that are under discussion here. So I would simply say that it's important here not to see this as a as other than a meeting of two separate leaders, or perhaps three in this case, who have their own agendas and whose objective is to find ways in which they can pursue and be effective in getting joint results. That is how I would hope things will be discussed. I think Lilia finally raises a very good point. There are going to be limits to the degree to which this relationship will be productive or can work normally if there is an effort on either side to demonize the other or continue to find the other, for one reason or another, very limited as a partner. Now, there will be limits to the partnership or to the joint activity no matter what, because interests differ. But I think the reality here is what Obama is doing in coming to this visit and what he did with him in London was trying to sketch out and to find the opportunities where you can do something other than define our relationship by the differences and magnify them to the maximum extent possible, to the point where we are unable to work with each other, even on things that are in each country's interest. And I would say that's that turning that around in that direction is perhaps what was really meant by resetting the relationship.
Okay. Jessica?
Additional, anyone?
Yes, I would like, if you don't mind, I would like you to elaborate on the missile defense system, how important that is to Russia. We hear a lot on this side that the Russians use it as a pretext or just posturing on this because they can't be serious in considering this as a threat. Is that the case? And how difficult is it going to be to strike a deal on a follow-up to start without any concession from the American side on the missile defense system, if both are linked at all?
Well, let me start, and maybe Jim, would you want to start?
Well, let me just make a couple of points. I think it's very important if you're going to say how does this president approach this problem as he goes forward. It's important to read the testimony of General O'Reilly and some of the other testimony that's been given to the Congress about the intentions of our own government vis-a-vis missile defense, not just in the so-called third site in Poland and Czech Republic, but across the board. And if I understand it correctly, what you find if you look at the budget figures and you look at the way in which it's being described, there is going to be a new emphasis on, in essence, theater, missile defense, areas of non-strategic defense. That and it is clear that there is, in this context, a review going on of the whole strategic defense system, including the third site. And the conclusions of that review have not been reached yet. So he comes to this meeting, it seems to me, for America's own reasons, with a rather different approach to missile defense than the previous administration. And whether that opens any real opportunities or changes the picture significantly in terms of intentions going forward or possible agreements on cooperation in missile defense in the sort of sub-strategic area and so on, I don't know yet. But it is clear that the United States is coming with a different position than the last administration left office holding and articulating. So I think we'll just have to see. I guess my final point about it is certainly it has been the American position, as I understand it, that if we're going to get this follow-on agreement to the START agreement, trying to inject the entire or a solution or an agreed outcome on offense-defense into this negotiation is probably a prescription to ensure that we won't have an agreement on time. So there's, I think, been an effort to see this as a subject that is going to have to be taken up in the next negotiation.
I very much agree with Ambassador Collins' assessment. Let me add to that, from the perspective of the Russian leadership and the Russian security defense establishment, missile defense is about both security and status. Security, there's a lot of... if you look into the Russian national security strategy that was only signed into law, if you like, by President Medvedev in the middle of May, last May, you will see that the existential threat to Russia could only be posed, according to that doctrine, by the United States acquiring this first strike capability. Now, first strike capability means that you essentially eliminate the possibility of the other country to have a second strike, and that in that sense responded to your first strike. So you have a first strike that will not be followed by a second strike. Now, this is all very much Cold War, but this is very much the reality today. So this is a serious matter. When the Russians look at the proposed sites in Poland and the Czech Republic, they invariably refer to them as the third site, which means that, which carries the implication that this is part of a global system. One site is in Alaska, another site is in California. The third site is planned for Poland and the Czech Republic. Now, this is also about status. There are very few areas in this world where Russia and the United States could be at eye level. And the missile defense, like strategic offensive weapons, is one of those few categories. For status purposes, it's very important for the Russian elite to keep that kind of a relationship going. I believe that the idea of having a joint missile defenses is one of the more constructive ideas that have been advanced in that field in the past 10 years or more. Basically, it invites you to quit the territory marked as mutual assured destruction, nuclear deterrence, hair trigger alert, and all these things that were typical of the Cold War situation, and move to an area where strategic also means collaboration, where you collaborate on the most sensitive issues and you collaborate with the use of the most advanced technologies. Now, if you start doing that, then you're leaving the territory of the Cold War and you come to a situation of strategic collaboration against a third country or third party threats. Now, that would be crossing the Rubicon, in my view, in terms of the strategic relationship. That if you think seriously about one day, and that day, as Obama said, may not be in his lifetime or anyone's lifetime, those people who are living today, but a world that does not have nuclear weapons anymore. And if you want to go down that path, if you do not accept nuclear deterrence as something that will always hang over people's heads, and Moscow and Washington, as we're speaking, are being targeted by so many weapons on the Russian side, so many weapons on the American side. If we're prepared to live with that, that's one thing. If we believe that that's not necessarily the best thing for the future, then we need to start walking away from where we are toward where we want to be. So this is a small step, but as I said, that will be crossing the Rubicon. Now, this enterprise, even if attempted, could fail, but a worse situation would be created if they abandon the idea for the time being and continue to treat each other as essentially as de facto military adversaries. And this nuclear standoff has, let me remind you, has It has survived the end of the Cold War. It has survived the end of the Soviet Union. It has survived the end of communism, and we're still with it, and it's still with us. So I think it's a very important thing. Putin has been advancing that idea since 2000. At Kenny Bunkport, he made a few suggestions to President Bush. The Russians have updated their ideas since. As I said, it's about security and status for them. So I think there's a Russian interest there. But if the United States takes a broader strategic outlook, that could be a nucleus of something that will be looked upon in the future as a thing that started our delivery from the adversarial relationship of nuclear, mutual, assured destruction, so typical of the Cold War period.
Thank you.
Thank you. If any of you have any final comments, we can make those, and then we can wrap up.
Lilia, would you want to know?
Well, maybe I will give a glimpse of optimism, because we were, with Dmitry, very pessimistic. You know, folks, President Obama is coming to Russia in a very important for Russia moment. Russia is merged in the economic crisis, and the elite is disoriented, and the population, the society is just waiting for some kind of vector, for some kind of sign of trajectory. And by the way, 62% of the Russian population say that they're ready for a new breakthrough, for a new political system. And 43% of Russians say that they look at the United States as a friendly country that cares about the world in a positive world. So President Obama can come to Russia as an embodiment, personal embodiment of change. And in this case, he will find a very attentive and friendly audience. So, well, a lot depends how he will use this opportunity, because he is now the only world global leader that can have an impact not only on the Western society, but also on the society in this transitional state. And he can say, also address the Russian political elite and say, you know what, we do care what you are doing in your country. We do care how you follow commitments that you undertook when you joined G8 and when you joined the Council of Europe. He can say it maybe not only openly, but in private. And it can make a change.
Jim?
I think I'll do it.
Well, let me say in conclusion that I think that it is a very important visit. It will give an answer, and what happens after the visit will give an answer whether the United States-Russia relationship at the beginning of this year is just the beginning of the end of the first phase of hopefully an improved and satisfying and relationship that would help the United States and would help Russia, or whether this will be a summit which will be followed by a trough, and this will be a missed opportunity. It is a very important opportunity between for both countries, for both sides, and it's more than the governments, it's more than Obama and Medvedev or Putin and the U.S. administration. It's about the two countries. And I think that with some luck, we can confound the skepticism that analysts often share. I hope that politicians, and I know that politicians, operate differently from analysts. They are proactive people. They change realities. They do not just describe the realities. They can, and actually they must be optimistic, even though the people watching them may sometimes be mired in healthy or unhealthy skepticism. So good luck to Obama in Moscow. Good luck to his Russian partners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.